Would you like to play some football?
Welcome to Gridiron and the Gospel, a faith and college football podcast. I'm George Schroeder. He's Brad Edwards, and we're going to talk all things week three, sleepwalk Saturday, as it were. Although there's a little more to it than that. We thought it was going to be sleepwalk Saturday, and some of them actually did sleepwalk and almost got in trouble. But before we do that, let's talk about our presenting partner, Subsplash. Subsplash allows your church community to access messages, resources, and even give to your church from one place. It also equips church leaders to connect with their congregation in ways you never could have before. Subsplash is so much more than just a church software. It brings people together, it empowers giving, it fosters discipleship, and it transforms lives. And if you're interested in learning more, you should book a demo at subsplash.com/SBC. When you use that link, you'll get a special discount for churches, but you do have to use that link for the discount. And again, that's subsplash.com/SBC, subsplash.com/SBC. And as always, first half is football.
And that's right, George. You mentioned earlier Sleepwalk Saturday is what we're calling week three because there were a lot of highly ranked teams that just didn't bring their A game. A few of them got a little bit of a scare. I don't know that many got a major scare, but there were a couple. And then there were a couple also that ended up losing. Obviously, the memorable, was it 61-yard field goal, I believe, by Missouri to beat Kansas State was one of the upsets. And then, how about the no-show by Tennessee in the Swamp? I mean, I say no-show. We talked about it with Chris Lowe last week, and it's been a long, long time, about 20 years, since Tennessee went into the Swamp and won, and yet – they were considered to be a pretty solid favorite, and fairly so, given how Florida looked in week one against Utah, the only other game they had played against, you know, a top 25 caliber team. And yet Florida looked like a completely different squad than they did on that first Thursday night of the season. And Tennessee looks nothing like the Tennessee that we saw last year. And obviously they miss Hendon Hooker right now, and he's not the only one, but yeah, those two upsets. But aside from that, George, you know, Georgia trailing by double digits at the half, Michigan against Bowling Green only up 8 at the half. You know, Florida State got a lot bigger of a test, kind of hanging on at the end to win by only 2 at Boston College. You know, Texas really blew its game open against Wyoming in the fourth quarter after having looked so good against Alabama the week before. And speaking of Alabama, wow. I mean,
well, I thought you were going to mention that loss.
Yeah, it sure felt like a loss if you're an Alabama fan or even a player on the team. But I mean, they won 17-3. But man, that offense, they went through, it was almost 3 full quarters before they finally got into the end zone. And by the way, that's on the heels of not scoring a touchdown in the first half the previous week against Texas either. So back-to-back games, not scoring a touchdown in the first half, but only 17 points. And by the way, if you weren't watching the game, it was basically the last play of the game. Alabama could have taken a knee and run out the clock, and they ran it in for that second touchdown to make it 17-3. So they looked very shaky, and we'll get into that later. But overall, what were your impressions and your biggest takeaways from what we'll call Sleepwalk Saturday?
Well, I mean, you know, Florida State up 31-10 at BC. It's an emotional game, the red bandana game every year for BC. But to let them back in the game, and I mean, Florida State escaped. What, 31-29, I guess, was the final. Escaped. That was interesting. This is the first time we've seen Florida. And look, small sample size, but at some point we got to quit talking about small sample size because we are now one quarter of the way through the regular season if you've played 3 games, right? And a couple of schools haven't, but almost everybody has. So if you played 3 games, you're a quarter of the way through the regular season. We're starting to know who you are, or you better start developing. Maybe a Florida is developing, right? That kind of thing. It's the first time we've seen Florida State look sort of, you know, not world beating. And so that was interesting. And then Texas, I don't know we should be super surprised. I think the Wyoming team is a pretty tough team. They're not great, but they're pretty tough. You know, in in week one, I saw them beat, or actually didn't see them because I left early. You recall that from one of the previous pods. But they beat Texas Tech, and they needed extra time to do it, but they did that. I mean, they're a pretty good squad, and Texas is going to be flat after a great win and then hearing about how great it was for a week. But, you know, Texas did what they're supposed to do late in the fourth quarter, right? Poured it on, scored three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. So that's okay. The one I really want to hit on, and it's because it's the one that is the craziest thing, and you begin to say, okay, and you already mentioned this, is something really wrong with Alabama? And the answer is yes, because they used a couple different quarterbacks. None of whom, by the way, Brad, were, you know, they changed quarterbacks, and it's not, and they're not using Milroe at all, even when none of the other quarterbacks are effective. So it's like, it's hard to figure out what's going on with Alabama, but it appears it's not just quarterback, but quarterback is a major, major issue for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, look here, George, I'm not sure it's their biggest issue. And that's the scary thing if you're Alabama. I think the offensive line is the biggest issue. That's not to say that quarterback is a non-issue, because it definitely is, but it starts up front. They cannot establish the run. For all the talk about how big these guys are and how good they look in their uniforms, they don't block very well. And that's both, you know, for the, you know, the running game and pass protection. And you mentioned the quarterbacks. Jalen Milroe, not all that impressive against Texas, but he did lead a few touchdown drives, actually, you know, was able to help them take the lead late in the third quarter of that game. Went the whole way. There was a point in the fourth quarter where a lot of people were wondering, is Saban going to make a switch? And he didn't. He stuck with Milroe. Obviously, he threw a really bad interception in the fourth quarter of that game that ended up putting it in a position, you know, Alabama was in a hole that they couldn't climb out of. But then, you know, kind of the day before the game this past week, the story broke that Tyler Buckner, the Notre Dame transfer, was going to start, and he did. And then he was replaced by Ty Simpson, late in the first half, after, you know, Buckner had basically done nothing with the offense. Simpson, while he did make one nice throw that ultimately led, you know, to a touchdown at the end of the drive, he was not impressive. And so you mentioned Milroe, despite the offensive struggles, did not appear in the game. But here's where I think we are, is that Saban knows that the first conference game, which comes up on Saturday against Ole Miss, is very losable. And I think he felt like at the end of the South Florida game, he had to give everybody enough opportunity to figure out who his quarterback will be for the Ole Miss game. And I think that's why he didn't make a switch. He wanted to see what Ty Simpson could do when given the opportunity. And I mean, based on what I saw, you know, what we've seen through three games and seeing all three guys get a decent number of snaps, I think Milroe is the best option for this offense. He's not a great option. He's nothing close to the previous four quarterbacks Alabama's had, who are all now starting in the NFL, but I think he's the best they have. And this is a team that, to me, is going to need an amazing season out of its defense if they're even going to go 10-3, because I look at that conference schedule and I don't see a gimme. The way they've played in the last 2 weeks, there's not a game on that conference schedule that I think you can automatically chalk up as a win for Alabama. And I cannot believe I'm saying this before Nick Saban is retired.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's more likely? Three SEC losses, which would mean, of course, four losses in the regular season, or that they right the ship and somehow maybe don't get to the SEC title game, but they end up with some kind of a 10-2 type of regular season. What's more likely at this point? And you got to think about the relative strength of what we've seen out of the rest of the SEC when you answer that question. But what do you think?
So, to your point, and this is a different conversation, is the rest of the SEC hasn't looked that great either. So maybe, but to me, the biggest thing is that Alabama, where are the points going to come from? Because look, the defense only allowed three against South Florida, and that was a short field, but it was also a team that could not throw the ball. They're going to face teams in the conference that can throw the ball. Texas could throw the ball.
Like almost all of them?
I mean, Texas scored a lot of points on Alabama because of its ability to stretch the field. And so I think they're going to struggle. Saban's first season was, I think, 7-6, 2007. Since then, the worst season they've had is 10-3. I think that is about the best Alabama could hope for right now, based on what I've seen, is 10-3. So in my opinion, I'm expecting this to be the worst season that Alabama has had, or the worst team, and we say, you know, worst in quotes, worst team Alabama's had since Saban's very first year, 2007. That's what I think this is.
Well, and I'll just be honest with you, Alabama fans are going to think of it as terrible. So it's, you know, you can use air quotes all you want, but they'll agree with you. A couple of quick notes. 17-3 was the final score, but Bama scored a touchdown in the final minute. Okay, so first of all, USF, which had lost to Western Kentucky in the season opener. And if I'm right, they had won four games in the last 3 years. So that's who we're talking about here. We're not talking about, one of these, we used to call them BCS busters. We're not talking about one of these kind of group of five teams. We're not talking about Boise State rolling in with a salty team back in the day. And by the way, Alabama usually just kind of punches those guys in the mouth and goes on about their business. We're talking about a terrible, at least heretofore, terrible team, and they couldn't move the football on them. Alabama couldn't move the football on them. It was a slugfest.
A pillow fight is actually what we used to call it. Slugfest is being kind.
You're right. Slugfest is Alabama LSU 2012 regular season, right? Yeah. That's a slugfest.
Well, 2012 was a really good one, too. But 2011 was the 9-6 overtime game. Yeah.
9-6, right. That's what I'm thinking of. All right, so that right there, I'm just going to tell you, and I kind of joked about it, but I guarantee you it's 17-3, but Alabama fans think it was a loss. That's how it feels. And it wasn't, and if they somehow righted the ship, you get one like that, and it's okay. You don't get any style points, but the committee won't be worrying about those style points. But the idea that we're talking about, on the one hand, the idea that we're talking about this Alabama team and the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is crazy. And on the other hand, the idea that we're talking about that it's crazy to be talking about that is crazy, too, given what they've been. It's just weird. It's like a Twilight Zone. It's like something from Fansville or something.
And if you took away what Alabama has done in the previous 15 years, without that, there's no justification for ranking this team in the top 20 right now, based on what we've seen through three games. I say that meaning that the on the field proof in the pudding is that there are a lot of teams that could have beaten Alabama either the last 2 weeks. I mean, there are a number of unranked teams that could have beaten Alabama each of the last 2 weeks. And so this is why I feel
one of them, South Florida.
If South Florida had any passing game, that game could have come down to the wire. And I just, this to me looks like a best case 5-3 in the SEC team that Alabama has right now. Best case.
You know, all right, I'm going to take this shot. Alabama fans, forgive me. I love you guys. But Alabama dropped out of the top 10, which, by the way, means Miami retains the longest. They will keep their longest time in the top 10 streak. A friend of mine sent me this a few hours ago, so I need to look this up, right, and just go with it. But Alabama falls out of the top 10 this week after 128 consecutive weeks, which means that Miami, record streak that lasted from 85 to 93 of 137, survived. So this would have been the year probably that Alabama would have equaled it or surpassed it. I'd have to do the math. But instead, it survives. But Alabama fans, I'm just kidding here. They fell to 13th. And you just made a point, Brad. If they weren't Alabama, they wouldn't be ranked. My point is this. If they'd have lost, they might have fell to like 15th.
I shouldn't have done that, but I did. It's true that they are getting benefit of doubt because of the helmet, right? And because of Nick Saban.
That's right.
And they're going to have to prove it starting next week. Beginning, Ole Miss is, what are they ranked, like 15th, right? Just a little bit behind Alabama. And I know the game is in Tuscaloosa, but this Alabama team does not look equipped to be able to flip the switch. It is not just simply a matter of, okay, if this improves, there are multiple things that need to improve a lot. And one of them is the offensive line. And if they can't run the ball at will against most of the SEC schedule, I just don't see how they're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, and look, we're going to pick that. That's one of the games we're going to pick. And so we'll get into that at the end of the second half of this podcast. So, all right, so we've talked about Alabama. We mentioned FSU and Texas. There's some other sleepwalks. Georgia, you mentioned. Who's been impressive? Whether it was yesterday, Saturday, we're recording this on Sunday night, as we always do, and you're listening to it on Monday morning or sometime during the week. But whether it was week three or all season long so far, who's been impressive?
I would say under the radar, so kind of outside of the top five, two teams to me that have just been consistently, I was going to say superb. Maybe that's a little bit too strong, but given what they should do against the competition they've played, right? Like, have consistently played up to expectations. Those two would be Penn State and Washington. Two teams that hardly anybody talks about. Neither one is the highest ranked team in its conference, but both of them are in the top 10. And I think at this point, those two teams look as good as anyone. And look, George, you know, you've watched it the same way I have. I mean, there was a long stretch during our time of covering college football where there wasn't much of a gap between number one and number 10. But since about 2016 or so, when the Alabama-Clemson thing kind of kicked into full gear, and then LSU had that one really dominant team, Georgia, last couple of years, it's been quite a span of years now that there has been a significant gap between the two or three best teams and everybody else. At this stage, it doesn't look like that's the case this year. This actually, through 3 weeks, and this could change dramatically as we go forward, but where we sit right now, this looks like a year where I would not be shocked if someone other than Georgia or Ohio State won the national championship. And I say that having already written off Alabama, because that's dream world right there based on what we've seen from them the last 2 weeks.
Well, this is, I will tell you this. In some ways, there's a piece of me that wants to say, be careful writing off Nick Saban. We talked about this last week, though, with Chris Lowe from ESPN. Those losses back in 2014 and 2015, I think, were the years to Ole Miss. There was some flukishness involved with that. I mean, clearly Ole Miss gave them fits with the offense that Hugh Freeze's bunch was running at that point, and they had some great skill position guys at the time, especially on the edges. But this feels different. That said, there were a lot of dynasty is done pieces written then. Now, I say that, and Georgia has already derailed the Alabama dynasty. They've beaten them 2 years, and won two national titles in a row on their own. But we can talk Alabama all year long.
Will. If they start losing more games, then yeah, we'll definitely keep talking Alabama.
But listen, by the way, I'm not certain they're. Yeah, I mean, let's just stop talking about it right
now.
We'll
just leave it at this, George. We're going to learn a lot this Saturday against Ole Miss, because
that's exactly right.
If they don't flip the switch here, it's going to be a long season in Tuscaloosa.
That's right. Now, again, the separate conversation that we're not having yet is how good is the rest of the SEC? And that remains a real issue as they continue to drop games. Missouri with one of the highlight wins for the SEC when they hit the 61-yard field goal as time expired to beat K-State, and they came back to beat K-State. That's a great win for Eli Drinkwitz. It's a bad loss for K-State, even on the road at Missouri. But that's like essentially one of the marquee wins for the SEC. And that's one of those that you sort of expect to sort of be a ho-hum win if you're the SEC.
Yeah. I mean, even aside from the games they've actually won, it's just the performances, like what LSU did against Florida State. It wasn't just that they lost. It was the way that they lost. Same thing with Alabama, Texas. It wasn't just that they lost. It was at home and just getting dominated in the fourth quarter when the game was ultimately decided. And there've been a few others that you could throw in there, but those two in particular, the A&M at Miami would be another one that I would add to that list. But yeah, there have been some real egg on your face losses for the SEC. One of them being South Carolina's performance against North Carolina, and then that same South Carolina team push Georgia. I don't want to say they pushed them to the limit because Georgia obviously asserted itself in the second half, but Georgia had more trouble with South Carolina than North Carolina did.
That's exactly right. That said, I'm going to give Georgia the sleepwalk.
True, absolutely. They deserve
there.
It.
We started out. Georgia's still, they haven't been, you know, just a unbelievably great, but they haven't given me any reason to think that they're going to drop any games here or there, especially as you look at Tennessee's performance yesterday that we talked about earlier. I don't think we have talked about it. Is that part of our extensive pre-show preparation?
Yeah, no. We mentioned that they were kind of a no-show, but I don't think we really got into anything other than the fact that obviously there's a drop-off at quarterback from last year to this.
We just mentioned it, and here's the thing. You did mention it's been 20 years. It's now been 10 times in Gaines. You know, they've lost 10 straight in Gainesville. So there's something going on there, and a couple of them were like fluky things. But this wasn't. And that's really crazy given how poor Florida looked, as you mentioned, against Utah. And a Utah team that I think is pretty good but hasn't looked great since that win on opening night. And so, what I was going to ask you, I'll just go back to the other side of the SEC and then we can stop talking SEC. SEC West, because the East, it's got to be Georgia and we'll just see what happens there. SEC West. I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm a much bigger believer that LSU is a lot better team or can develop into and is already developing into a lot better team than it played against Florida State. And that's not to say that Florida State isn't better and wouldn't stay better and that kind of – I'm just saying I think LSU still maybe has something close to the ceiling that we thought about them going into the year. A lot more thinking that than I think Alabama is going to make some dramatic evolution over the course of the year. Which, again, is crazy for me to say, given who Nick Saban is and what his program has been. But I believe in LSU out of the West more than I believe in any other squad at this point.
I'm with you. Yeah, and I mean, we'll see if a team like Ole Miss is good enough to give them a run. I wouldn't be surprised if A&M is much like LSU and that they end up looking and being a lot better than they were in that one loss. Now, at this point, do I expect A&M to challenge LSU for the West? No, but I mean, it's crazy. We haven't even played a conference game yet, and we're basically writing Alabama out of this conversation, but that's what they deserve from the way they've looked. Who else could it be?
This will get clipped and saved.
But you know, another one that we just don't know anything about yet because they haven't played anybody is Auburn. And we'll see, you know, what Hugh Freeze is able to do there. But at this point, I'm with you, George. I think your SEC West favorite, even with a somewhat embarrassing loss in the opening weekend out of conference, is LSU.
Yeah. All right, around the rest of the country wasn't a lot going on this week. As we said, Sleepwalk Saturday, it was the week when you thought things could get wacky. So, not very far from me, 25 minutes or so from me.
And this
Boulder,
is one of the Sleepwalk games, by the way. I mean, this, Colorado was a big favorite.
Yeah, it was. Colorado was a big favorite. Colorado is the story of college football, right? And that remains true. Won 43-35 in double overtime. And I understand that the Rocky Mountain Showdown is a chippy rivalry, okay? And it's a rivalry that, you know, okay, forgive me for this cliche. It's not really true, throw out the record books. But rivalry games can be wacky. But I don't think anybody, maybe not even in the Colorado State locker room, thought it was going to go the way it went. And maybe that's not giving Jay Norvell and the Rams
credit.
Well,
nobody outside of the Colorado State locker room thought it was going to go
that way. Nobody
outside
the locker room. But for a large majority of the game, Colorado State played better, looked better, was better. Now, Colorado's a better team, higher ceiling. We've seen what they've done in the first few weeks. They were probably due a letdown. But that's not even what I want to talk about. Big win for Deion to get it done. Big win for the Buffs to get it done. And now suddenly comes the best rest of their schedule, right? They're playing at Oregon, and then USC comes to town. And so they're about to hit the meat of what might be the most difficult conference in the country this year, very possibly. They're about to hit that, and we'll really get a read on them. They remain a great story. But here's what I wanted to say. If you watch the game, and most of our listeners maybe didn't because it kicked off at 10 o'clock Eastern time, kicked off at 8 o'clock here, Mountain time, and went to sometime after 12:30 Mountain time. So wee hours of the morning, and most of you guys were already getting up and getting dressed for church by the time it was over, basically. But it's always chippy. But it was really chippy, and it actually went from chippy to cheap several times. You know, Travis Hunter, the two-way star for the Buffs, who is fabulous, got leveled on a hit that shouldn't have been made near the sidelines by one of the defensive backs from Colorado State. Cheap shot. He ends up coming back into the game, lay on the field for a while on the sidelines, comes back in the game, but then goes to the hospital. And the word is, and nobody knows exactly what the injury is. I don't know if it's a head injury. I don't know if it's something in his midsection where he seemed to get hit. The word is, according to Deion Sanders, he's out for a couple of weeks. Right? And then, you know, there were some other cheap shots and things like that, and just some sort of play past the echo of the whistle. Yeah. Right?
Typical rivalry
Shedeur
game
Sanders.
Stuff, yeah. Well, I say typical. Maybe not Shedeur all Sanders, of it's typical, but playing past yeah. the echo of the whistle is rivalry yeah. week stuff.
Well, Bobby Bowden used to say play to the yeah. echo of the whistle, right? Which is like, okay, you're out there on the edge. But these guys are playing well past it. I mean, Shedeur Sanders didn't get flagged for this, but the TV cameras, the ESPN cameras, caught him poking one of the Colorado State defensive players in the eye. And so it was going both ways, is my point. And we can talk about who instigated, who did this, who did that. I'm going to tell you this. I think the coaches instigated it. Well, I mean, you could say it started with Jay Norvell talking trash basically about Deion when he said, when I'm talking to grownups, I take off my hat and take off my sunglasses. That's just a jerky thing to say. Firing up his fan base, I guess. I said that sometime midweek. Deion took that and took it, escalated at another level, said that, you know, they've done and went and made it personal. Personal. You know, okay. But I think between the two of them, and especially after that Jay Norvell comment coming out of the CU sort of camp, you heard all sorts of "we're going to like beat the dog out of" type of comments, which on the one hand, by the way, you didn't do, right? It turned out to be a dog fight. But I'm going to tell you this, an already chippy game, an already chippy rivalry, it's got that potential, turned into something that was, you know, before the game, there was a little skirmish and there was all this going on. I think the coaches are the chief instigators, Brad, and I think they should have, and I hope that they both realize, they both act like third graders and we're not leaders of men in those moments leading up to the game. And they may have caused some of those impressionable 18 to 22-year-olds to be too amped up for a game they're already going to be amped up for. And so I'm calling them both to task, or taking them both to task. You guys have got to act right if you want your players to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fair, George. You often see trash talk / bulletin board material with these rivalry games, but it doesn't typically come from the coaches. And I think in this particular case, it's fair to say it added fuel to the fire. And unfortunately, you know, resulted in at least one injury that could be significant, because with Travis Hunter out, you got the meat of the schedule now coming up for Colorado, including a game against Oregon this week, which I guess this is a good opportunity to point out to everyone that after this past Saturday, which on paper didn't have a lot of intriguing looking matchups, this coming Saturday has a bunch of them. And that's just one of them, Colorado at Oregon, and we're going to pick five of those games coming up at the end of this podcast. But first, we're going to get to the half, because this podcast, first half football, second half faith. And so this wraps up our football discussion. We're going to take it into the locker room. When we come back, we're going to share a little bit about what's going on in our lives and talk a little bit about our faith.
And welcome back to the second half of Gridiron and the Gospel, a faith and college football podcast. And the second half, of course, is about faith. And our presenting partner is Subsplash. I want to tell you about them one more time. Gridiron and the Gospel is brought to you by Subsplash. It's the leading engagement platform for your ministry. You can book a demo at subsplash.com/SBC. And when you use that link, by the way, you get a special discount for churches, but you do have to use that link to get the discount. And again, that's subsplash.com/SBC, subsplash.com/SBC. And as I said, second half is our favorite half. As much as we love college football, we love Christ more, much, much more. It sounds so crazy to even say it that way, but we love talking about Jesus. And so this is a highlight of my week each week,
Brad. Absolutely.
And one of the highlights of my week is when we get to tell people what's on my heart, what's on our hearts. And so the On My Heart segment, which you're going to tell us about this week, is presented by Legacy Way. Legacy Way, giving glory to God by sharing his love through generosity. Find out more at legacyway.org. And Brad, tell us what is on your heart this week.
Yeah, so George, I recently had a conversation with a guy who I used to work with at ESPN and was just kind of catching up with him. It had been a while since we had spoken, and was telling him about what I do now. And those who've been listening to the podcast since the beginning know that I now work in sales, completely out of sports. And, his reaction was, man, you just got a raw deal. He's like, there just aren't many people that know more about college football than you do. And, for you not to still have a job in college football it's just not fair. You deserve better than this, is what he said. And I said, but at this point I can't really dwell on that. I just got to move forward. And, I know I can do other things, and that's where I am right now. But thanks for the compliment and your belief in me and all that. But anyway, after we hung up, I was just kind of thinking about what he had said and, a little bit about this idea of, it's not fair. And I did deserve better than what happened, even though it's the type of thing that happens to a whole lot of people. And it certainly happened to a whole lot of people in the year that it did for me, which was 2020 during COVID. And then
that's
of course,
right. In a lot of professions, right?
Absolutely, all over the place. Yeah. And while, look, there may be some truth to that, there's so many times when you let your mind go to the wrong place and God brings you back, right? And I was in my car later that day and listening to the radio, and my favorite song came on, which is Who Am I by Casting Crowns. And for those who don't know the song, it's kind of, and I've never read what they have said about the background of the song and the inspiration for it, but I just assume from the lyrics that it's directly connected to both Psalm 8:4 and Ephesians 2:8. And, most people know at least Ephesians 2:8, but you can look up both of those if you're curious, and you can listen to the song as well if you want to hear the lyrics. But the part of the song that I really want to focus on is included in the chorus, where it says, "Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are." And all of a sudden, it just kind of hit me that what I don't deserve, it has nothing to do with my job or with college football. What I don't deserve is for Jesus to have voluntarily put himself on a cross for my sins, right?
That's right. That's right.
What I don't deserve is forgiveness and the opportunity to spend eternity with him. What I don't deserve, none of us deserve, is God's grace, and yet it's been given to us anyway. And it's not fair. That is not fair, but it's simply a gift that's been given to us that we have to decide whether to accept. And that is what is on my heart, or has been this week, because that song in that moment really spoke to me and reminded me of the gospel, and this is the truth that we all live with. It's just that we have been given something incredible that we don't deserve. We didn't do anything to earn it. And yet we have this choice. And so I know that for myself and for you and so many others out there, we want everyone else to be aware that they also have this same gift has been given to them. And that really, George, is one of those things that just, it hit me at that moment. And it was just kind of like a ton of bricks, and it was like, it was emotional, you know, and it was just like, sometimes you let your mind wander and, you know, God brings you back and just reminds you of what really is important. And the only thing that matters is what he's done for us. And that's what that song is about. And that's the reality that we all face. And we just have to choose what we're going to do with that.
That's right. And listen, I completely agree with you. And the only thing I would say is that gift has been given. It's available, right? But you have to accept it, right? You have to understand. And let me just lay it out here. We should do this probably every week. But man, all of us are created by God to have relationship with God. And yet we've sinned, all of us. The Bible says all of us have sinned, and thus we fall short of a holy and perfect God. And, you know, so what we deserve, the Bible tells us, is death, eternal separation from God in hell, facing his righteous wrath. That's what we deserve. But a couple of verses before the verse you're talking about, Ephesians 2:8, my favorite verse in the Bible is, but God being rich in mercy, or who is rich in mercy because of his great love he has for us, made us alive with Christ, right? But it's a free gift. It's sitting there. You are able to be made alive with Christ. You are able to have relationship with God, but you have to come to the point where you say, God, I know this is true, and I know I'm a sinner, and I know I'm separated from you, and I need you. And God, I trust you for salvation. Thank you, Jesus, for coming to earth and living a perfect life and then dying in my place to pay that penalty and rising again. And I trust you. In you, and I will follow you. We have to accept that gift. And but back to what you were saying, Brad. I love the heart of that song, and I love how a good Christian song like that can take you back when you're kind of drifting. It happens to me too, where you're sort of thinking about what ought to be or what I could have deserved or whatever it is, and it's like, no. Who am I? It's not anything I've done. It's what you've done. It's not anything I am. It's who you are. And I don't deserve any of this. And yet you loved me. And I guess the only other thing I would say is it makes me think of flipping a few pages over in the Bible to the right towards the end to Philippians 2, where when I think about what I deserve, and then I realize there's only one who deserves anything, and he deserves everything. And that's Christ.
Absolutely.
And yet, in Philippians 2, we see that he, existing in the form of God, he is God, didn't consider God, equality with God a thing to be exploited or to keep, but instead he emptied himself and assumed the form of a man, including a form of a servant, and then went willingly to death on a cross. Even death on a cross, it talks about. Here's the God who deserves everything. And yet, even when he came to earth, he didn't come to earth as a king. He came to earth as a lowly servant, essentially, and served all of us, and then gave himself for us. And yet, we think we deserve things.
Yeah.
And so I love when a song brings you back and brings you back to truth, and then you sort of recalibrate and say, God, you are good, and you are working all things for my good as a Christ follower. And forgive me for thinking I deserve things. Forgive me for thinking I deserve this, that, or the other, whatever it is. You deserve everything, and you gave up everything, and yet I think I'm important. And so I love that. And so, man, that is what you just shared. That's why we do On My Heart, quite frankly. That's why we do it.
And this is also why... college football is not the most important thing. You know, you get into conversations like this and you realize, like, the second half of this podcast, the topic, the substance is much more important than the first half. I know we love to talk football, but there's nothing more important in the world or in our lives than what we just discussed, which is the gospel. And so, you know, I pray for anyone out there who does not know the truth of what Jesus has done for them, that they would dig into what we just said. Try to learn more about it. Look up these verses, talk to someone you know who's a Christian and ask questions and get to the bottom of this, because this really is what our lives are all about. It's getting to the point where you can
reach
accept
out,
that.
Reach out to us.
Absolutely. Reach out to us. And look, we might not know you, but that doesn't matter. Either one of us would be happy to take time out of our day to talk to you about this, because it is more important than anything else that, you know, that any of us could do in any day of our lives would be to have that conversation with someone.
That's right. Look, you could email us at gridirongospelpod@gmail.com, or, you know, if you're on social media, just hit us up and we'll end up direct messaging or something, but hit us up. I'm at George Schroeder and you're at J Brad Edwards on Twitter. So, man, we want to talk with you. We'll talk football all day long. That's fine. But we want to talk about Jesus with you. So we would love to do that for sure. So that, man, and I hope we get to do that. That's the heart behind this podcast, quite frankly.
Yep. And let me just thank one more time Legacy Way for presenting this segment on my heart and giving us a chance to have a conversation like this. Legacy Way, giving glory to God by sharing his love through generosity. Find out more at legacyway.org.
All right. So listen, and I should have mentioned this at the top and at the end of the first half too, but since you've hung in here with us, we're going to do picks just like we always do at the end of the show. And so we're going to get to those soon. And it is a big weekend. But this is the faith half, second half of Gridiron and the Gospel. And you just heard, you know, what's on Brad's heart and what's on our heart for you, the listener. I want to tell you a little bit. I didn't go to a game yesterday. I didn't go to the Rocky Mountain Showdown we talked about in the first half, the CU-CSU game. It's the talk of the town here, as you can imagine, on suburb on the west side of Denver today, even though everybody had to get up really early if they were going to make it to church and that kind of thing, right? And they had a late night, early morning, whatever. But one thing I did do, my older son George is at Baylor, and happened to be in town, pre-scheduled to be in town. And so when College Game Day and then Fox's Big Noon Kickoff both decided to do their shows from Boulder, I thought, you know what, this would be kind of fun. And so we actually, you know, from my time in the business at USA Today, Sirius XM, I know some folk just like you do. You actually used to travel with the Radio Game Day to all these super places. That's how you and I initially met, frankly, was I think in Eugene, Oregon one time back, way back in the day when Chip Kelly's Ducks were running the Blur offense.
It's always a fun scene. It really is.
Yeah. Well, it's college football's traveling circus, and my son is a broadcast journalism senior, journalism with a broadcast emphasis. And so I reached out to some folks I know at ESPN, and they got us a little, you know, we had the ability to kind of watch from up close behind the scenes a little bit. And so my son and I, he got in Friday night and we got up early on Saturday morning, because it's a 7 a.m. start mountain time, and went out there. And so we hung out and had a really good time. And one of the things that was really cool, I mean, so my son's name is George too. Super proud of him, love him to death. He got to meet a couple of people he wanted to meet. I'd just like to say Reese Davis is a super kind man. We know each other some, not nearly as well as you know him, Brad, but he gave George, my son, some time after the show. That was just, I'm grateful for that.
That's Reese. Yeah.
But I'm not, yeah, it is. That's right. That's who he is. And I'm not here to talk about like, oh, we had access or this, that, or the other. That's not what I'm talking about. One of the things that was hard for me, you know, we just recently moved to Colorado as I moved into pastoral ministry. And I'm so grateful for where God has taken me, both the career path into vocational ministry and also and into, you know, into the west side of Denver, Arvada, Colorado, Storyline Church. I'm super grateful to be here. One of the things that was hard was we spent the last couple of years 80 miles from my son and a couple hours from my daughter, who's a first-year teacher in Norman, Oklahoma. And so we left behind George in Waco. The last couple of years, we were in the DFW metro area, and I would drive down and we would you know, catch games together. And I say all that to say, because the job that I used to have with USA Today, and before that at a couple of other journalism outlets, was a great job. I loved it. You loved the ESPN job. One, what it didn't allow me to do was spend time with my son. And college football for me, this is a long way of saying, college football for me is about fathers and sons. And several years ago, I guess 2018, ESPN put together a bunch of video vignettes of different people in and around the game. And when they finally got down to like the D team, they asked me to do a video vignette. And I did. And they said, what's the memory that makes college football special for you? And it's college football is fathers and sons. When I was an 8-year old, I think, my father got me tickets to the Sugar Bowl. The only thing I wanted for Christmas. He got me tickets to the Sugar Bowl. And we drove down day before the game I grew up in Little Rock, an Arkansas fan, and we went to watch Arkansas play Alabama. It was Bear Bryant's last national title team, as it turns out. And so they beat Arkansas to win the game, won the national title in the old, rankings by the polls. And after the game, they let the fans down on the field. So we're down on the Superdome turf, right? And I'm wearing one of those big plastic, super ugly original hats, right? You know what I'm talking about?
I know very well what you're talking about.
They're much sleeker. They're much sleeker now, not nearly as ugly. And I'm wearing that hog hat proudly, even though Arkansas lost. And we're walking on the field, and I'm enjoying the day, even though Arkansas lost. And all of a sudden, something hits me in the head, and I realize somebody has taken the hog hat and run to the other side of the field, the other end of the field, like 100 yards down the other end of the field. We were like in an end zone. And it was one of the Alabama college students. It was, college-age kid from Alabama, So that was a traumatic 15 seconds. Yeah. And then my dad ran him down. And he didn't do anything he shouldn't do, but the student promptly, the student who's now in his 60s or whatever he is, right?
It has to be,
60s or 70s, whatever he is, gave him the hog hat back. And so my dad rescued my hog hat. And that's my favorite memory of college football, and it's fathers and sons. And I say all that, and this is getting really long, and I apologize. I haven't had those memories. I didn't make those memories with my son, George. We went to one game together when I was covering college football full time. And it was because it was one of those sleepwalk Saturday type of games. I was the columnist in Eugene. I wasn't at Oregon yet. My son, George, was a little bitty guy. And I went and we sat in the stands expressly so I could write about what it's like to take your son to the game and to try to explain this is one of the things all of you readers get to do and I don't get to do. And it was a great day, and I haven't had any more of those days. So I say all of that, this long, rambling story, to say the last couple of years were great as I got to go do things with my son. Not always sports, but like go watch football and basketball games with him, mostly Baylor games. Yesterday, again, we're recording this Sunday night, Saturday morning, just standing with him, just standing for 3 hours, 3+ hours, right? Doing nothing, not even talking a whole lot, just standing and watching him take it all in, right? He fist bumped the rock. But watching That's him take memory. It all in, I had this overwhelming thought, I'm just glad to be standing next to my son. And it was a good morning. And we didn't even talk about anything substantive, Brad. But the morning was substantive, I really think. Not even because of where we were, the fact that we had a little extra access or whatever, just because I got to do something special with him. And we didn't end up going to a game, watched a little bit on TV, but that was a special moment for me. And so college football's traveling circus comes to town and I get to take my son. And I'm just grateful to make up a little bit maybe for lost time. and just that it worked out that he could be there and we could do it together. I don't know where that fits in. It doesn't fit in the first half of the podcast. It sort of fits in, I hope, on the second half of the podcast.
Here's how it fits to me.
But y'all, go ahead.
Look, family is one of God's gifts, right? And especially relationships between parents and kids. And you know, with our podcast being this kind of intersection of college football and faith, I think it's an appropriate place to tell a story like that, because I think for a lot of the people who listen to this, they have that same experience, which is it was their dads, or in some cases, their moms and their dads, both were responsible for making them. Look, in some cases, it might have just been the mom. I mean, in a lot of places in the South, it may have been the mom who was a bigger college football fan than the dad. But you know, generations of kids have been introduced to this sport by their parents, and then that's where that passion just really begins. And not to say that it's the most important thing, but I can tell you, as someone who grew up in, like, you know, you told your story where you went to a Sugar Bowl with your dad. I grew up a Mississippi State fan. That's where my dad went to school. And there was no such thing as a Sugar Bowl for Mississippi State, I can promise you. They didn't get anywhere close to that. But I spent so many Saturdays of my childhood with my dad, not usually watching, because in those days it was more often listening on the radio and listening to Mississippi State come up with new and creative ways to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And the most memorable one, you mentioned the video that you had with ESPN. So that was college football's 150th anniversary. They interviewed people flashing back some of their best memories. And I also had a video that was in that series, and mine was talking about being at the I think it was the 1983 Egg Bowl with my dad. That was the one where Mississippi State, trailing by, I can't remember if it was 1 or 2 points, drives down the field for what appears to be a short game-winning field goal, and this massive, like almost hurricane-force wind blowing the opposite direction basically holds the short field goal up like right above the crossbar and then blows it back to where it lands like right around the goal line. That's how strong the wind was. And it was one of those things for those who saw it. And that stadium seated probably at most 60,000 people. And I bet there are 150,000 who will tell you today that they were there at that game. But even though the team I was rooting for lost, having been there with my dad, and that's a memory that I will have forever, as well as so many others. And I did, you know, win or lose, it doesn't matter. It's the time spent and the bonding. And that's something that I'm grateful for. And I'm just personally glad that you have had the opportunity, like you said, to make up for some lost time, because those of us who work in the sport, we don't have those opportunities on Saturdays when we're working to be able to enjoy those games with our families.
I would just say cherish those times. And, you know, that's not anything profound, but cherish those times. Be intentional about those times. The time goes really fast. Some of you guys have young kids, but it goes fast. That's what I would say. And I would say two other things. One, I should have mentioned this too. My dad's name is George. I'm George. My older son is George. The three Georges went together to the Sugar Bowl a couple seasons ago and saw Baylor play Ole Miss. And that was a ton of fun. So got to sort of do that. Loved that. And the other thing I would say is that story that I got to tell to ESPN is actually pinned to the top of my Twitter page. If you guys at George Schroeder, if you want to check it out, I probably told it better in the vignette than I did. And I'm talking about the story about my dad rescuing my hog hat. But I just would just say being around my son is a gift. And being around your children and being able to invest in them, even when it's just time, just time is the wrong way to say it, but even when it's not something substantive, you're not like doing a Bible study today with your son, although that's a great idea. Let's go. Let's do that. Just being with them and intentionally investing time with them. And that's so important. And I just pray you guys would be intentional about it. You know, do your best to be I do that with our youngest, Christopher. You know, we try to do things like go to games and throw football. And look, that doesn't make me or you any different than anybody else. We're not sitting up here. We're not experts. I'm sitting here telling you, because of my job, I missed out on a lot of things I should have done and should have watched and should have been at with my older two, especially with my older son. Don't miss them if you can help it. Make up for lost time if you can. I guess if you're looking for like pithy teaching to take away, you're looking at the wrong guy first. But secondly, those are pretty good. You know, don't miss it. Make up for lost time. Intentionally invest in your kids. You won't regret it.
And look, everybody's not going to have the opportunity you did to take their son to, you know, one of the biggest games of the week in college football. That's kind of an extreme, but any game will do, as you were saying. But as far as big games go, George, we have reached the point of the podcast where it's time for us to pick the big games of the coming week. And this week's picks are presented by Betterman. Betterman is calling an audible. They're giving men an easy-to-use playbook, a timeless strategy for how to win as a man. A free resource for small and large groups, Betterman is perfect for any gathering. Check them out at betterman.com. So, George, I don't know if we want to go through our picks record for the season so far, because and I think we have routinely been defeated by our guest pickers, which is a good reason that we didn't have a guest picker this week, because
it's probably the reason,
because we're tired of being shown up by people who are just coming in for a single week and looking much more like experts than we do. So, as I said before, though, this is a really fun week, and there are many more big games, or maybe not many, but there's several more, right? That we could have added to this list, but we picked these five, and I think they're all compelling for different reasons. So let's start with, this is a fun one. Did you know, George, there is a conference championship game being played here in September? We're talking the championship of the newest conference, the Pac-2, Oregon State at Washington State. Now, and look, obviously we're kind of having fun at their expense, and you know what they've been through is clearly not funny to them. But being the two kind of holdovers here from the Pac-12, obviously nothing is officially being decided as far as conference championships on this weekend, but they are playing each other. Oregon State at Washington State. For those who think home field is important, I'll point out the Cougars are at home. Who are you going with?
Well, listen, I think Oregon State's the better team. First of all, let me just say this. If they play this game next year in the actual Pac-2 championship game, it might be the 10th time they played each other. It won't be a rematch. It'll be the 10th game, because currently they only have two members coming back.
The 10-game conference schedule.
12 for the Pac-2.
Right. Five home and home.
I guess 9-game conference schedule plus the Pac-2 championship.
So which team is going to get the five home games and which one's going to get the four? That's the question. Yeah,
it's a coin flip, but changes the next year, so that works out okay. So
this doesn't work very well with the budget if you're only getting five or four home games in a season. But
No, that's right. I'm not talking about the three non-cons.
They're still going to get the non-con,
I'm just saying. Yeah, you get three non-cons. The Pac-12 is traditionally played, or the Pac-2 will continue to traditionally play, we hope, in this scenario. 9 conference games against each other. And then the best two teams in the two-team conference will play a championship game.
All right, you're stalling.
I am. Look, I'd like to pick Wazoo. They were impressive in beating Wisconsin. I think they're good. By the way, they went to Colorado State and laid it on Jay Norvell's Rams. That's why everybody thought, you know, that Dion and crew were going to just blow them out the water. But I think Oregon State is good enough. I think Washington State's better than everybody expected. I think Oregon State is good enough to contend for the conference crown, and I mean the Pac-12 conference crown, which means I'm putting them into the status of or the tier that would be USC and Washington and Oregon and maybe a Utah. I think Oregon State is in that, at least could be in that conversation. I think they're really good. So I'm going to pick Oregon State on the road in Poland.
Okay, I'm going to go the other way. I agree with you that I think Oregon State is the better team, but I'm going to go with the home team. And you know, George, you've been around the Pac-12, if we're still going to call them that, and you've been to these campuses, these stadiums or stadia, whatever the word is. And this is like the weirdest place to play. And I mean, not just in the Pac-12 or on the West Coast, like in all the country, it's one of the weirdest places to play just because of how difficult it is to get there. And certainly Oregon State is, you know, they've been there before. They know the drill. But at the same time, when Washington State is above average, like strange things happen there. And so I'm going with the Cougs, home field and Pullman. So we're on opposite sides of this one. Next game, another fun one. Florida State at Clemson. And by the way, check me on this, but I had looked at the new poll when it came out earlier this afternoon, and Clemson is unranked, right? I mean, they have the loss to Duke, and you know, it looked much better since then, but they haven't beaten anyone of substance. And but who would have thought preseason coming into this game that only one of these two teams would be ranked? That's the crazy part of it. But the unranked team, Clemson, is the home team. So you go first.
Clemson would be number, you know, as fans love to talk about, Clemson would be number 26 if you extended the poll out. They're in a weird spot. Others receiving votes. Just ahead of Missouri, Kansas State, TCU. Look, I know that the Clemson Death Valley is a tough place to play. I just look at Clemson and they are so pedestrian. I don't think they have a lot of weapons. Man, it's hard. But I'm a believer at this point in FSU. Again, we're three games in. We're starting to know some things. I'm going to go with the road team again for the second straight pick. I think FSU is the class of the ACC because I think FSU is really good. I think FSU is a legitimate playoff contender. I don't think the ACC has another because Clemson has slid three or four steps.
Okay, I'm going against you again, and this may be this may be a failure on my part to let go of the past and just see Clemson for what they are now and not what they were, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. But I'm taking Clemson at Death Valley. BYOG, bring your own guts. I think Dabo gets them up for this one. I was there in 2013 when that Florida State National Championship team announced itself to the world, prime time, where people thought Clemson had a chance and FSU said, don't even think about it. I'm not expecting that to be the case here. And maybe Florida State wins the game, but I think Clemson comes ready to play and I'm going to take them to win. All right.
Listen, I can't argue with you there. I got a feeling I'm not impressed with Clemson.
And I get it.
I've been really impressed with Florida State. And what happened at BC yesterday when they almost blew it, Florida State did, up 31-10, escaped 31-29. That doesn't hurt them going into this
True.
Game.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it exposes them, but it doesn't. But I think it helps them.
For sure. And this takes us now to our third game on the list. Which, I mean, hey, look, George, we got two Pac-12 games on here this week because now we got Colorado at Oregon.
Best conference of football, maybe.
Hey, look, they deserve it.
Maybe
they deserve to be on this list more than once. So, I mean, a big game. Unfortunately, as we mentioned earlier, Travis Hunter seems to be out based on what Deion said post game. But Colorado at Oregon, what are your thoughts?
Still a lot of playmakers for Colorado, but he's fabulous. I think he really hurts him on the defensive end as much as he's so good offensively too. Okay, I think they're going to score. And Oregon has shown some fissures so far, cracks and fissures. That's just a fun thing to say. So I'll say it on a podcast, cracks and fissures. But I think these Ducks are pretty good. I'm going to go with the home team finally. Three picks into our five picks. I'm finally going with the home team. I think the Ducks, this is a step up, a dramatic step up in class from TCU or Nebraska, certainly, or Colorado State, even as well as the Rams played last night. This is the start of that run that at one point we thought, well, this is going to be really tough. And now we really want to know what we're going to find out because next week We're talking about Colorado at Oregon. Next week, USC comes to town. And that's only going to be everybody's biggest game if somehow Colorado wins in Eugene. But Colorado's not beating Oregon in Eugene.
Right.
Not this year.
And I agree with you on this one. Look, the setup is similar to the Colorado season opener at TCU, where they were a big underdog. Not many people are going to give them a chance. And that much may be the same, right? But I agree with you that Oregon is a different team. Oregon, to me, is a lot better than TCU. And I think they'll flex a little bit of muscle here. And look, Colorado is a team that we knew going into the season that they're not deep, right? They brought in some talented transfers, but they're not deep. And I don't think they can easily replace. Oh, look, I don't know how many teams in the country could easily replace or replace at all a guy like Travis Hunter. But I don't right. think Colorado is equipped to do it. And I think they would have needed him in a big way to have a chance to win this game. So I'm going with the Ducks.
Yeah.
All right. And
we're not talking about a bunch of depth right. when we talk right. about Colorado. Even when we look at sort of they have some fabulous skill position players and Travis Hunter is the best on both sides of the ball. Not much depth
yeah.
going on
yeah.
there.
And that's just part of it when you come in and you run off, you know, half the roster. Like you're not going to be, you know, out there with 85 scholarship players, and then it just kind of goes with the territory. All right, so one other game that we actually mentioned in the first half of the podcast, Ole Miss at Alabama. And this one, George, is a lot more interesting than I would have thought it would be 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, and that's mostly because what we spent part of the first half talking about, which is, man, Alabama doesn't look like the Alabama we've known in a long time. I'm not sure we know what Ole Miss is yet. I'm not sure what we can really take away to this point. You know, they looked okay. I mean, pulled away from a Tulane team that was without their starting quarterback, right? Eventually beat up on Georgia Tech yesterday. I think they're pretty good. I think they're pretty good. And so this really comes down to what do we think about Alabama? Man, I'm going to give Nick one shot here. This just sounds stupid because I probably should give him more. I do think what we said in the first half goes, there are plenty of losses sitting out there that could happen, which is not something we have said about Alabama. I think this is not one of them. I think this is prime spot for Nick Saban. The world thinks it's all crashed down, that it's all over. And if there's a guy who can get them ready to play a game like this, it's Nick Saban. I'm going Alabama over Ole Miss in Tuscaloosa.
Okay. All right.
I know they don't have a quarterback. I know, but somehow, some way.
I appreciate your logic because you're correct the way you assessed Ole Miss, which is that the last 2 weeks against Tulane and Georgia Tech, I think the final score was a little misleading. You know, it was the final score, I think, was more impressive than the performance in both of those cases. And so I'm with you, and I'm not sure how good Ole Miss is. But one thing I do have confidence in is that Ole Miss is better at quarterback. Now, will that be enough? Will the Alabama defense show up? By the way, Alabama's defensive coordinator from the last 2 years, Pete Golding, is now at Ole Miss. Nick Saban basically let him go. Pretty much told him to go, right? I mean, that's the only reason you would make a yep. move from Alabama to Ole Miss, you know, with the same job, defensive coordinator, is if Nick didn't really want you there anymore. So I think this one is going to be personal for Pete Golding for whatever that's worth. I just have more confidence in Ole Miss being able to generate points. And so I'm taking Ole Miss to go in and pull the upset, and it is completely because I have no confidence based on what I've seen so far from the Alabama offense. I have no confidence in the Alabama offense based on what I've seen so far. And I just, I think Ole Miss gets somewhere around 30, and I think that's enough to win the game. And like I said before, if Alabama is going to flip a switch and salvage their season – and become a team that we're still talking about in playoff contention late in the season, this is where it starts, is this game. And you're not necessarily saying they're going to do that, but I'm saying that I don't think they are going to do that. And so three games out of four, George, we're on opposite sides here. All right.
Yeah, and look, I can't argue with your logic either, but I'm glad we're on opposite sides because at least it gives us something to pick at each other about next week.
This is a little competition here to follow on Saturday. All right, so will we be on opposite sides of one more game? It's a possibility. Ohio State at Notre Dame is the big game of the day, and you know, Notre Dame has looked pretty good so far this season, much better, much different start than it was to last season. Meanwhile, Ohio State, while they did what you'd expect Ohio State to do this past Saturday, the two previous ones, they, you know, not quite what you expect out of the Buckeyes. So I don't know how much we know for sure about either team right now, but to me, Ohio State's performances in the first 2 weeks leave a little bit of doubt here.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think for that reason. Look, here's the thing. Notre Dame actually is a third of the way through its regular season. They've played four games because they played that week zero game against Navy in Ireland, right? And they, you know, beat up on the midshipmen. They did what you're supposed to do to Tennessee State. They were impressive on the road against an NC State team that I don't know how good NC State is, really, but they were impressive on the road, won by three touchdowns there. And then they did what you're supposed to do to Central Michigan. I think this is a really good Notre Dame team. And the thing that I like about Notre Dame is they've got an offense that can put up points, which has not always been a consistent strength for Notre Dame. And I think they've got good skill position players. I think they're really good. Ohio State, man, we know they've got some players.
Oh, they have some players.
I'm not completely convinced.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, maybe. Hey, seriously, right there with Georgia in terms of like sort of the loaded roster, right? In terms of what you what pro scouts salivate over, or certainly what recruitniks say when they come out of high school, anyway, right? But they've been a little underwhelming, and I think at Notre Dame, I'm going with Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame's the better team, which is weird to say, but that's what I think. And I know it just means I've got caught up in the hype from the Irish. I get it. And I'll hear from Buckeyes fans if they win. I'm going Notre Dame.
Well, I'm with you. I'm going Notre Dame here too. And I guess this pick would be more popular if Ohio State had slopped around this past Saturday, but they didn't. And maybe the light finally came on for them in week three. But I'm just going to go based on what I've seen from Notre Dame so far. You know, we saw, was it 2 or 3 years ago? I guess it was 3 years ago, the COVID year, when Notre Dame had the primetime game against Clemson, and they were able to win that one. It feels like a similar setup to this. And so I'm going with the Irish. This has nothing to do with mystique or Notre Dame. I'm just with you. I think Notre Dame has looked really good so far. And if we're being honest, they've looked better than Ohio State has through week three. And as you pointed out, that's actually four games for the Irish. But that's the basis of my pick, is that they've looked good. They're playing at home. And so I'm going to go with them, even though I can tell you before the season started, I would have been without hesitation taking Ohio State in this game.
No, I get that for sure. No question. So, well, that's it. I mean, we were on opposite sides, 3 out of 5 picks. We'll see what happens next week, week three. And, you know, that'll be great. Listen, we could have talked for so long. We say that every week, but that's true. We got to go. We got to let you guys get on about your business, right? Get back to work, whatever it is. We do appreciate you guys listening, that's for sure. But let me just say this. Thank you to Betterman once again for being our picks partner. We are really grateful for Betterman. Betterman's calling an audible, giving men an easy to use playbook, a timeless strategy for how to win as a man. It's a free resource for small and large groups. Betterman is perfect for any gathering. Check them out at betterman.com. And we have to get out of here. So we need to also thank our On My Heart partner. That's Legacy Way. We appreciate you guys. And please, y'all understand, that's our favorite part probably of the entire podcast, is On My Heart. I know it is mine to hear what's on Brad's heart and occasionally get to share what's on mine. I love that. So thank you, Legacy Way, for that. And thank you, as always, especially to our presenting partner, Subsplash, which is so much more than just a church software. It brings people together. It empowers giving. It fosters discipleship, and it transforms lives. You can book a demo today at subsplash.com/SBC. And when you use that link, you get a special discount for churches, but you do have to use that link for the discount. SUBSPLASH.com/SBC, subsplash.com/SBC. And as always, if you're just listening to us because somebody sent it to you, visit us online at gridironandthegospel.com. You can listen to us that way. You can find us on Twitter or Instagram at @gridiron_gospel or at George Schroeder or at J. Brad Edwards. Email us at gridirongospelpod@gmail.com. And be sure to rate, review, and subscribe in your favorite podcast app. We're on all of the major podcasting platforms. Tune in next week. We'll be reviewing week three. Looking forward to week five. It's unbelievable.
Moves fast, doesn't it?
But it really does. This is, by the way, week four, which is Saturday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, is the last September games.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So we are almost out of it. I guess that's actually not true. It's September 30th is a Saturday. So we'll edit that out. You know, you will never hear this. That's not going to be part of this. Actually, it is. We just run and go. So I got it wrong. So tune in next week for more of Gridiron and the Gospel, which is a faith and college football podcast, and it's a BP Sports production.